This week on The Public Eye, I'll be speaking with Lisa Cooper. She is a partner in Quite Literally Books, a woman-owned publishing, small publishing company, bringing back to life female authors, books from the past to a new generation of readers. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Al Vona, host of The Public Eye. Nice to have you with us this Sunday evening. I've asked Lisa Cooper to join me because I think it's a fascinating area of the publishing business. One, bringing back, past books, past literature works, for a new generation of readers. I don't think anybody would dismiss the notion that reading is, it can be very meditative, informative, entertaining, and so on and so forth. So for the next half hour, we'll be talking with Lisa Cooper about Quite Literally Books, how it got started, how many books are published per year, and how things are going. Lisa, nice to have you with us.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you're excited because a lot of people would say, "Oh, Al's the host." I'm not going to be excited about that. All right, the check's in the mail. anyway. I know, huh? I got to ask you because I grew up in an era. Late 50s, early 60s, mid 60s, so on and so forth, where local public libraries were stocked with books of all descriptions. And those libraries were busy after school, weekends. And I'm not saying that they're no longer busy, but what I'm getting at is even bookstores. I used to love perusing bookstores, but brick and mortar, like everything else especially in the retail end of things, has gone by the wayside. So I have to ask you right up front. I know that Quite Literally Books got this off the ground with a niche, first and foremost, bringing back books written by females, not necessarily for females, but by females, for a new audience, but also, for an audience that perhaps never read the books when they first came out. But let me ask you, was there any trepidation? Was there any hesitation in planning this, that because of the changes, we now see social media, the things that were normal back in the 60s and 70s are no longer that way. So was there any hesitation, or did you feel very confident that this niche would be successful?
We're always still wondering if it's going to be successful, but the very reasons that you just mentioned are the reasons why we started Quite Literally Books. Bermond is my co-founder and partner. We grew up together in Austin, Texas, and public libraries were such a big part of our lives back then. It was such a treat to go and spend hours on a Saturday down in the children's section of the old Austin Public Library. I remember the day I got my library card. I could not believe that by signing this little card that I got to carry around with me, I got to take books home for free. So it's just that sort of that reading culture, and there still is a reading culture, but we wanted to produce something that really highlighted the analog experience of reading. And we've done that by focusing on stories that were perhaps once, a big part of the public dialogue. These are oftentimes well-known women authors back in the day that have disappeared off the shelves over time. And we find them. Sometimes they're on the shelf still. Sometimes they are still in print, but they're just really flying below the radar. And so we reprint them in a beautiful form. We have our books beautifully designed, printed in Germany on Munken paper, which if you don't know Munken paper, I hope you pick up one of our books and feel and smell the paper quality. But we're hoping to create this experience that's holistic and just makes reading an absolute pleasure to indulge in.
The thing I have to agree with you, and it really becomes it really becomes personal for each individual, but it's such a shame, like anything, I guess, that goes by the wayside. I mean, I'm all for progress, but when somebody mm-hmm. has put their heart and soul into a very good book, and we all know that that's a craft, not anybody can just sit there and create, you know, what I call works of art, written works of art, literature. And then, as you said, to see them in some cases completely disappear or no longer on the radar screen. I guess the key word here is you found a niche. Have you created a niche? And with that said, has that proven thus far to be successful?
Well, the jury's still out on that. Our first set of books came out on April 7th, and our second set just launched on November 7th. And so we've been doing this, our books have been out in the world for less than a year. Mm-hmm. So the jury is still out. And we are finding that there is a very big difference between making a book and selling a book. There's even a big difference between marketing a book and selling a book. And so we are really having to kind of scramble a bit. I mean, we are a very small operation. We were fortunate in the early days that we were able to hire some consultants, you know, that helped us understand what we didn't know. Bermond and I both are voracious readers, but we are neither of us from the publishing world. We've had other jobs and done things that we thought, you know, at least sort of made us, if not with the actual skill set that we needed, we thought, well, we can figure this out. But the learning curve has been very, very steep, and it's kind of a scramble, I'll be honest. And it is something that I don't think we fully understood when we went into this, all of the challenges behind book selling. And there's another, you know, the piece that is so funny, social media. Makes a lot of things more democratic, right? And it also forces us, and, you know, we're trying to create an analog experience. We're all about tactile. We're all about the physical object. And yet we're having to learn how to navigate, you know, this world of social media. I know that a lot of your listeners are going to probably think, well, goodness, you know, doesn't everyone know how to do social media now? But no, the answer is no. we are sort of new to that world and figuring out, you know, how to get attention and how to turn attention into people who actually want to hold our books in their hands. Yeah. How to get our books from our shelves onto the shelves of bookstores. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all a big puzzle still, and yeah, we're figuring it out.
Well, like you said, it's certainly a steep learning curve, but you know, once I always believe people who have a passion and put their heart and soul into any project, it's got a return in a positive manner. At least that's the hope. I just want to take a quick pause to let our listeners know that you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at wicn.org. I'm Al Voner, host of The Public Eye. Nice to have you with us. My guest this week is Lisa Cooper, one half of Quite Literally Books, a small publishing company recently started bringing back works of literature, works of art, to a new generation and an existing generation of readers. Lisa, something you said earlier in the last going back and forth, you were talking about the learning curve for yourselves. And I think because you've got that passion, whatever obstacles, you'll overcome that. But something else that you had talked about that keeps sticking with me because I keep thinking, God, I don't see those things that I remember as a kid. And it's somewhat, for lack of another term, it's almost like hurtful. It's like, why did you take that away? It worked for generations of people. What I'm getting at is how receptive have the bookstores, whether they're online or brick and mortar, have they been, you know, open to this concept that, hey, look, we're a small publisher. You know, we're not one of the big dogs on the strip, but we have a unique focus. And, you know, with your help and, our efforts, we can really move some books. Have they been receptive?
I would say that a lot of bookstores have been receptive. One little sticky wicket that we were unaware of is this whole concept of book distribution. There are only one major book distributor in the U.S.
Wow.
And to get in with them is actually very difficult for a small press like ours.
Mm.
And so we have had to, scramble and use a much smaller distributor, great distributor, called Asterism, that basically specializes in distributing books from indie presses. And a lot of bookstores don't like to use distribution outside of that main system. And, it's just created sort of a logistics nightmare for us because we're not able to get easily onto shelves. That being said, I would say, because we are, like you mentioned at the beginning of your talk just a few minutes ago, like, we are people who adore public libraries and we adore the local independent bookstore. I mean, I go to mine like pretty much weekly. I try not to buy something every week, but I kind of do. A lot of people still see local independent bookstores as sort of a community hub, and a lot of them operate that way. And I would say that many of those have been super receptive and open and supportive to our little venture.
I think it's such a unique, as you said, a unique way of selling books. You go into an environment that's very welcoming, a warm environment, that vibe of a lot of people who share a common interest or passion, as you said, for reading. Before you know it, you're shoulder to shoulder. Oh, hey, did you read this, by the way? Oh, yeah. Believe me, it's a great book. Try it. So it's one, it's social. Secondly, you learn something because somebody else may have read a book or a title that you had not. Gives you a little bit more confidence. Should I go with that? Many of them today have little cafes inside the place. To me, it's like, what could be a better thing to do especially now that we're in November in New England, on a very cold Saturday or Sunday? What a perfect opportunity. And at the same token, be able to walk out with these literary works. With that said, how far back these books were all at one time printed in the past, how far back did you decide to go? I mean, you didn't go back 100 years, where I assume we're talking a couple of decades, or, where did you draw
the... We're all over the place.
That's
a really good question. I think our oldest book today is from 1872.
Wow.
And our newest book is probably, I think it's 1950, I believe.
Hmm.
And what's interesting is a truly good book is a good book over time.
Right.
We call them classics, and mm-hmm. I remember in high school having to write a paper about what is a classic, and I'm always thinking about that, because sometimes something is really wonderful and then you revisit it and then it's not so good. And it doesn't make it any less wonderful in that moment, but it doesn't have staying power. It doesn't carry forward. What we find is that there are quite a few books that have carried forward and aren't just like you, Al. I am a big history buff, and so I do love being able to unearth something and go back in time and understand that it was important good in that time space. But what we're looking for is not just like a relic of the past. We're looking for something that's relevant to our present and that maybe is, prescient for its time, explains something to us about our current times. And there are a lot of books that are, 100, 150 years old that do that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, because I'm thinking, I want to know more about not just this region of the country. How did we become, the United States? Who are those people? What kind of lives did they live? What was it like? And as you said, books going back over 100 years, the issues facing those people then totally different than some of the issues that we face today. But nonetheless, we can learn from the past. And I have to say, I just want to throw this in that he's passed on now, but Pulitzer Prize winning author David McCullough, who is a great historian, his daughter came on about a month ago, and she said the same thing that you did. She said, a good book never goes out of style. She said, the thing is that you have to reintroduce that book or those works to a new audience. And many times that's the challenge. I mean, a good book is a good book. As you said, 100 years, 200 years, it'll always be a good book. The question is getting it out to that younger audience. So with that said, is the audience, have you got a demographics? Who's more likely to buy books published through, or quite literally books? Is it an older consumer, or younger, or does it cross all boundaries?
We have been very surprised that we have quite a number of younger customers. I would say mid to upper 20s into 30s is a really strong demographic for us. Honestly, I thought it would be people my age. I'm in my 50s now. And those are our, I would say those are probably our core customers. But I'm really happy to report that age does not seem to be something that's keeping someone away from our books. Now, I will say that we do not have as many male readers as I would like. We skew very much towards women. And that is actually sort of an interesting conundrum.
Mm. Well, maybe the girlfriends or wives or neighbors, those who are female, will say to them, hey, you love to read. I've got a great book. It's just kind of getting, like you said, getting the word out, and it should cross all demographics. But I'm very surprised, and also that gives me some hope that we haven't given up on books, where you've got a younger generation that are very interested in reading these past, these past works of art, as I call them. So that's a good thing. I mean, that must be very encouraging, for you as a publisher.
Yes, for sure. That's sort of the really exciting part of it. I think that there is, as much as we love spending time on Instagram and TikTok, I do think that there is a conscious pushback on, that kind of entertainment and the way you can, spend hours of your life just scrolling. I mean, I honestly think that reading anything long form, whether it's, an article in the New Yorker or, picking up one of our books or, little light, fluffy beach reads, I think all of that is an antidote, to doom scrolling. And I think that there are a lot of people who are looking for that, are looking to engage with something, preserve the way your brain can work, critical thinking, and just being sort of lost in something that is not clickbait. And yeah, I think people actually are looking for it.
I have to agree. I mean, for myself personally, and of course, you and I grew up at a time where, like I said, public libraries and, corner bookstores were very prevalent. And we're very common. So it's hard to, it's hard to dispel that. It is what it is. It's been part of our DNA. But more importantly, we live in a world of social media. We're not going to go back to the 1800s. It's here. Utilize it when need be, as I say. But to take a hardcover book whatever the genre is. I mean, for me, it's, you know, it's U.S. history. I'm just a history buff by nature. But whether it's fiction, nonfiction, history, or otherwise, the fact that you can just put a hold on the social media, you know, put the phone down, put the cell phone down, turn off the computer for a half hour, hour, whatever it may be, and pick up that hardcover book, you know, your favorite cup of coffee, in my case, it's a good glass of wine, and just read. To me, Lisa, it's almost it's therapeutic. I get a sense mm-hmm. that you feel the same way.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, having a beverage in my hand, whether it's wine or coffee, and curling up and, you know, on my sofa with a book is honestly like one of my favorite pastimes. And it is therapeutic. It takes you sort of, it's sort of the opposite, right, of like being bombarded with like news tidbits and dancing dogs. And I do love the dancing dogs, but I mean, I think it makes your brain fire differently, clearly. I mean, that's, you know, they've done studies on this, right? And the way that things sort of slow down for you when you engage with the book, the way your brain processes things, the way your body reacts to that. And it's one of the reasons why we were so adamant about creating a book, a physical object that is such a pleasure to engage with. I mean, we have... we hired an amazing designer named Louise Steely and her first lieutenant, Christian Adamski. They have designed a gorgeous book for us, and we have been fortunate to partner with really great artists, Anthony Russo, who does a lot of stuff for The New Yorker and New York Times. He did our first set of covers, and Megan Mulholland is an up-and-coming artist who did our second set. And so it's a beautiful visual in terms of the covers. I wish your listeners could see them, but they're really pretty. And we, you know, they have French flaps so that the covers feel good in your hands. The paper, as I've already, you know, gone on and on about, Munkin paper, again, you got to smell this. And lay flat binding so that you can open your book up, hold it in one hand so that your other hand can hold your cup of coffee or your glass of wine, as it may be. You know, you can spread that book open, you can turn it upside down, you can do whatever you want, and the spine's not going to break because it's made to bend and not break. And it's a custom size. We actually have this book, a size that's not a trim size that you normally find on U.S. shelves. It's way more common in Europe, and it just feels amazing in your hand. And, you know, it's all meant to be part of this experience so that not only do you get this great story between the covers that will engage your mind, it just feels really good to read a quite literally book.
We got just a few moments, but I have to, as I'm listening to you, everything that you're saying, for me, it's like, exactly, that's, you know, make that particular book so appealing, not just what the content, not just what was written between the pages, but make it aesthetically pretty. Give it a scent. Make it feel comfortable in your hands, because we, as human beings, are stimulated through our senses in many, many ways. And I think that that's a great and novel idea. With that said, like I said, in the closing moments, let me ask you this. With all of that said, that again gives you that edge, gives you that niche. Have you had any feedback that this has been very, you know, very appealing to those who have bought the books?
Yes. The feedback is pretty much 100% positive. Mm. And that just thrills us to no end.
Yeah.
We just put out our second set of books, and I'm just going to tell you what they are really quickly because I'm so excited about them. I have them in my hands as we speak. Herland by Charlotte Perkins Gilman, which is a book about a female, a woman-led utopia that three men decide to quote-unquote discover and what happens when they get there. And then our second book that we just put out, it's quite literally books number five, it's called Who Would Have Thought It? And this one I want to recommend for you, Al, because I think you'll love it. I know you're a big history buff. This takes place during the Civil War, and it's like a rollicking satire, I would liken it to like Mark Twain style writing, but it was written by a Mexican American woman, Maria Amparo Ruiz de Burton, who had sort of access to the inner political elite circles during the Civil War time. And boy, she skewers. She calls a lot of people and a lot of groups out on hypocrisy. And she is so, so funny and very short chapters. So if you only have like a minute, you can just pick this up on the subway, even read a chapter and you won't miss your stop. So highly recommend that. And our last book is called A Little Dinner by Christine Terhune Herrick. It is a laugh out loud funny cookbook of all things. Who knew a cookbook could be funny? But it really is. She was like the Martha Stewart of the 19th century. She wrote a ton of books, all how-tos. She did it because her husband died of typhoid and left her with little kids. And so she turned to the pen and wrote maybe 30 books or something on homemaking, cooking, child rearing, all of it. Yeah. And she is very wry, very, very funny.
Absolutely amazing. I'm going to seek out that book that you mentioned. But this has been great. I mean, unfortunately, we're just about out of time here. With that said, Lisa, if people want to reach out to you directly or to the company, how might they do that?
Yes, please come to our website. You can order our books directly from us. We are at quiteliterallybooks.com. And as I mentioned, we are now on Instagram. So come follow us there and see what we're up to.
Again, the book company, the new book company, with a really unique niche is Quite Literally Books, bringing back great works of literature to a new generation of readers. Again, I want to thank my guest this week, Lisa Cooper, who is part owner of Quite Literally Books. Any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments, questions, or feedback to me directly through the email. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. For the public eye, this is Al Vona. Thank you so much for tuning in.